Welcome to the Living Rooted podcast. This season, we're diving into powerful truths from Scripture and sharing stories that help to unveil the lies and false agreements that keep many of us from living loved and loving others well. Join us on a transformative journey as we explore what it means to live rooted in God's love.
So in this episode, we're talking about another emotion in our feelings series. It's an emotion that we might not think about when we think about all the emotions. It might not be top 10 that comes to our mind. It's an emotion, but it's also a process. And it's probably one that we're not really interested in participating in. And it's the emotion of grief. So when we think about that word, McKenna, when you think about that word, what else comes to mind with that word for you, that emotion?
I think for me, it's an uncomfortable word. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone hears grief and is like, oh, yay. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's an uncomfortable word for me, but it's also a word that has brought so much richness into my life and into my relationship with the Lord, because I think that it's taught me so much about the value of things.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable word for me as well, and there's stories behind why that is. And so we can define our term for a bit if we'd like. First, as we get started into it, and maybe we'll talk about the process of grief and see what comes up in this episode. There's lots of books, resources, podcasts. I mean, people actually just have whole sections of teaching only about this topic. It's deep and vast, wide, heavy, of course. And so if we were to define it, for me, I would say, like, clinically, you could say it's something like protesting pain. Grief is protesting the pain. Who's interested in pain? So grief is a muscle to be developed, but who wants to go to that gym? It's saying, I don't want this thing that's happening. I don't want to suffer this loss. So grief equals loss. We'll talk in a moment about the kinds of losses, the kinds of direction grief goes. But that's how I would define it. It's the protesting of pain. It's saying, I don't want to lose what I've lost. How would you see it, McKenna?
I think the protesting of pain is a really great definition, because I think it kind of asks me to be honest and to have courage to admit that something was valuable to me, a person or an experience. Mm-hmm. And it kind of beckons me to not shut down and move things aside and act like nothing matters. Mm-hmm. You know,
I love that.
And it actually takes a lot of courage to admit that something mattered to you. Mm-hmm. Something does matter to you. Mm-hmm. And to admit that you're hurt over the loss of it or the disappointment of it, or
that's right.
And it again just shows you how much you have to participate in it. It's not just a feeling, it's something you have to participate in. It's a process.
That's exactly right. So if you don't, then you actually truncate the growth that you could have for your life. Mm-hmm. So grief equals loss. And another insight about grief is that we grieve to the degree that we love. Mm. A nickname for Jesus is a man of sorrows, one acquainted with much grief. Why? Because he so loved. Hmm. Let's think about an overt loss in light of Jesus and his style. Since we're being conformed to the image of him, let's look at him and how he did it. There's this story of him arriving what seemed late to a funeral. His friend Lazarus had died. Lazarus' sisters, Mary, Martha, they were all tight with Jesus. So Jesus comes upon there after hearing that he was sick. He came after he died. And people have a lot of views on that, like why didn't he show up earlier and all these insights. If you really cared, he'd be there. So in a sense, both Mary and Martha really say, like, if you were here earlier, you could have stopped this. Now Jesus is doing something, unfolding something that no one could have imagined. But it's amazing because as Jesus makes his way to his friend's tomb, Lazarus' tomb, the text tells us that he wept. Some people like to pride themselves in knowing it's the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. I think in one translation of the Bible, there's this verse in Nehemiah that says, he said. So that's actually technically shorter. But anyway, Jesus wept. Why did he cry? Some people preach that he's crying because he feels sad for bringing Lazarus back from heaven. But the text doesn't say that. Some people said he's crying because he's angry that sin and Satan ruled the day, that death exists. The text doesn't say it. Some people say that he's angry and sad at the hired mourners or the fakeness of the whole situation or the unbelief of the dear friends. The text doesn't say it necessarily. I actually think the text gives us an insight when the witnesses to Christ's emotion say this phrase, "See how he loved him." Isn't it possible that he had emotion because he loved his friend? People say, well, why would he cry if he knows he's going to see him in a second? Because he loved his friend. Sometimes Christians were so heavenly minded, we have no empathy of the things on earth.
Wow.
The first person I ever lost ever in my life was a babysitter. Her name was Rebecca. And she was our pastor's daughter. And Rebecca babysat my brother and I 2 summers in a row. In the Midwest, where I'm originally from, summer vacations in the 80s were all of June, all of July, all of August. So our sitters would watch us Monday through Friday around 7:30 a.m. to about 5 p.m. And I just love this gal. So I might have been like ages 9 to 11 or 10 to almost 12, not quite really. And Rebecca was out of high school, so into college age. So maybe between, I don't know, 17 and 19. And there's some weekends she'd watch us the whole weekend too if my parents had an outing. This gal, like, she'd put us to bed at night, my younger brother and I. She'd kiss us on our foreheads and I would just like lose it. I just love this gal. Okay. And I believe it was totally pure-hearted, you know, on my end. I remember one time I got to stay up late just with her. My brother got put to bed and I got to watch the Muppets Christmas special with her. And I remember her coming down the stairs after putting my brother to bed and saying to myself, when she comes down those stairs, I'm going to ask her to go with me, which is 1980s language to say, be my girlfriend.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Oh.
John Eldridge talks about the haunting beauty of a woman. And yeah. I have known that since I was 10, at least.
Oh.
I just couldn't do it. She's too beautiful.
Wow.
And so Rebecca passed away in a car accident. And I remember being particularly bothered at the funeral. This is the kind of gal like I would just like stare at church, okay? Just a boy. And an older, well-wishing woman came to bring comfort, I think, to me. And she said, Jason, why are you sad? She's in heaven. So an agreement is formed in our first episode. However long ago that was, we talked about agreements or strongholds. I make an agreement. It is selfish to be sad. So then in time, my aunt passes away, my grandmother passes away, other friends and family, my wife and I have lost a child before, and I have very little emotion, but I don't know how many funerals I presided over and can bawl my eyes out for other people, but can I do it for myself? So the agreement is forged. They're in heaven, you should be happy. And yet when Jesus comes upon his friends, if you know that he knows he's rising from the dead and we'll see again, he wept. Why? Because he loved. That's why. He loved. We grieve to the degree that we love. Grief equals loss. So we have to acknowledge that. So what about kinds of losses? This is where it's tricky because grief isn't just simply over death of a loved one. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
That's called overt grief, but there's also covert grief. But before we do that, think about that for yourself too, McKenna. Would you share anything like an overt loss of a loved one? Have you ever suffered that before?
Yeah, I think when I was 23, we had a really dear friend that was kind of like a you could say a big brother or just such a healthy male figure in my life, and he was married and had little tiny children, and his wife had a baby on the way, and got cancer, and within like weeks just tragically passed. And I think there was not only grief in the loss of his life and his presence in my life, but it was also in how I saw him in my future. Mm-hmm. And how I dreamed of him meeting whoever I would marry one day, mm-hmm. or how I dreamed of him just being in my life and being a place of counsel, mm-hmm. and a safe place to talk about things. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of like spiritual parents to me, mm-hmm. when I was in my 20s. And it really fractured me in, mm-hmm. my early 20s, the loss, mm-hmm. of him.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you sharing that. And so it's an evidence of your love.
Yeah.
Yeah, the loss, yeah. equals the love.
Yeah.
So when we think about covert loss, that would be like loss of the parents that one needed but never had.
Mm-hmm.
Or we dropped my daughter off to college. I'll never get ages 0 to 18 back again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or when parents drop off their child to kindergarten, it's the same.
Yeah.
Loss of a job opportunity that was there in your hands and somehow it slipped past. Or when people sell their childhood home. All these things are kinds of griefs, mm-hmm. kinds of loss, covert,
mm-hmm.
right? Loss of an opportunity, loss of a connection. It doesn't, mm-hmm. mean someone literally died. It can mean these covert versions, hidden versions of loss. And they have to be worked through just as much as working through the death of a loved one. Yeah. But a lot of times we minimize these ones, or we should just get over it, or,
yeah.
you know.
They creep up too. I think they're a little sneaky because you, mm-hmm. don't, I find that they're just more subtle in how they present themselves, mm-hmm. to us, if you could call them that.
How about
but
that?
They sometimes you don't realize them, and, mm-hmm. their presence is a little shocking.
Yeah,
like you when got you it. Realize you're like, oh my goodness, I feel pain in this moment over this, and I feel I need to grieve this thing, and you're, mm-hmm. like, am I actually? Why am I sad in this moment, yeah. about this, you know?
I can give you an example in the life of a student, actually. It's actually just coming to my mind right now. So my son, Ethan, who turned 14 the first week of February, the last few years at his school, he tried out for the middle school basketball team. And he thought this year would be the year. He's never made it. He's not too tall, but he's feisty. And it just didn't work out this time. And I remember pulling into my driveway. My wife and he got home at the same time I did, as he just got the news. And he kind of collapsed into my arms. In fact, my wife took an image of it. In the same night, he demonstrated almost all these stages of grief, which we'll get into in a second,
aww.
In one night. The loss of the hope of being picked.
Hmm.
The loss of the hope, or the idea of having slipped through your fingers the thing that you really thought you possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And it is painful.
Mm.
Watching others grieve can be secondary grief, mm. in a sense. So we grieve for those who grieve, right? Whereas scripture says, you know, we offer comfort to those who need comfort. Probably the most famous verse shared at funerals would most likely be something when Paul writes, we don't want you to be uninformed, brothers. We do not grieve like those without hope. My background would actually say, therefore, we don't grieve at all. Or at least my agreement might say that.
Yeah.
But the text doesn't say that. It's grief with hope, sorrow with joy. You can do both. The heart is vast enough to do both. Also, the heart is vast enough to be grieving several things at the same time and be in different stages in grief at the same time.
Wow, yeah.
That's how wide the heart is. Who, mm-hmm. could know it? Scripture, mm-hmm. says, right? So it can be something that we might call to someone else as silly, like not making the basketball team. But to that person who suffered that loss, it's like the most painful thing in that moment in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So a 14-year-old boy or 44-year-old woman, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The griefs come, and you have to participate. So overt and covert, both are kinds of loss, and both have to be faced.
So how would you say we participate in grief? What does, mm-hmm. it look like?
Mm-hmm.
And does it look different for everyone?
Everyone can enter into it in the stages of grief at different places, and you can bounce around. we had shared in a previous episode that this notion of time healing all wounds, maybe I was a bit emphatic in a previous episode. I think it's garbage.
Yeah.
I think it creates guilt. That's a different feeling, guilt. But yeah. It creates guilt, like I should have been past this by now.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm not, it might mean that I've not quite participated. Or, you know, the love I have for that situation is still residing in me. So the grief might on occasion still arise. Mm-hmm. So how does someone, you know, start into the process? Well, it's just by acknowledging the loss. Hmm. So we could think through the stages, but we have to remember that people won't go through them cleanly and time won't heal that wound. Remember, as we said in the previous episode, medicine heals wounds. So if it's emotional, relational, spiritual wounding, then we need emotional, spiritual, relational medicine. Time ain't gonna do it. If you don't participate in the grief work, then you actually can stay, as some clinicians say, stuck in grief. Hmm. And actually, this might be painful for a listener to realize, some people prefer it because they think if they give up on the grief, that means they don't love their person anymore. That's a lie.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Some people feel guilty that if they laugh on the same day that they lost, that something's wrong with them. That's not true. That just shows the vastness of the heart.
Yeah.
Right. So some people believe with a misbelief that they have to hold on to grief in perpetuity. So that's not true. You have to start into it and you have to work through it. The gymnasium of this muscle is not easy. Mm. So I think the original ideas of the stages of grief are fine. They're fine. And let's talk through them. Clinicians younger than me add other stages, but I'll just go with the original ones. I think they're fine. So that first stage, as many of our listeners might know, is denial / like shock. Speaking more relationally, as I would like to do, what that looks like in real life is the statement, I can't believe it. Or for some people, hopefully our listeners can handle this, what the?
Yeah.
And here comes the expletive, right?
Yeah.
That's the actual statement of shock.
Yeah.
The car accident happens. What? So denial and shock asks what? Or no question at all and doesn't want to look at it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Because who really wants to look at it?
Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm. So I remember back to that story of the first loss I had experienced as a friend, the babysitter that passed away. I remember somehow, I don't know how I came across it, if they put it in the newspaper or not, but like an image of the vehicle. That was for me, like back to the shock again. Mm. What? How did that happen? And I possessed, the people were telling stories of what it sounded like. And I'm hearing this in my, you know, before abstract reasoning brain, how to cope with that story and that imagery in my mind. I think I remember it in a newspaper, but maybe I made it up. I just visualized what I was told. What? I can't believe that happened. Mm. Mm-hmm. Think about covert kinds of grief. What? Mm-hmm. What are you saying to me? What happened? I can't believe that. Or some people might say, even films show this. Don't you? Don't tell me that. Don't say that to me.
Yeah.
Not you. You don't say that to me. Those are all declarations of denial. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
How do you perceive denial?
It's like the most intense form of overwhelm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the most overwhelm you could experience as a human being. Mm-hmm. And you can't accept the reality of what's happening.
There you go.
It's the pain of it is so great and it's so overwhelming. You can't accept reality. Mm-hmm. And so you have to almost create your own reality, mm-hmm, or avoid reality.
You got it. That's exactly how we do it with ourselves, with others. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to think about it.
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to believe it. So for some people, they stay. I think some people teach as if it's a natural process that everyone works through. I understand that teaching, and I'm not all-knowing, and I've not sat with all the people of grief, but I think if you don't participate, people can stay. It's not, you can naturally not move forward if you don't participate. Mm-hmm. So that next stage is inevitable if people are working through it and facing the pain, and they're protesting pain, but as they're facing the pain, that next stage is anger. Mm-hmm. And everyone does anger differently. Some people let it out with expletives. Other people cry. Other people get silent. Everyone does it differently. And we've talked about anger before in a previous episode, but let's borrow from that a little bit. So we know the amount of anger we have by the why questions we ask. Why now? Why this? Why did they do that? Why God? But why is a disingenuous question, because we don't care about the answer. We just wanted to not have lost what we lost. So no answer is going to make us say, oh, okay, I accept that.
Right.
Right. So my wife and I, we lost a child before our oldest was born. When the doctors told Amanda that it wasn't her fault, within the next few days, it was amazing to watch her come to recovery. It doesn't mean she didn't love her child. But with her temperament and her own story, she was able to come to acceptance of what they said. But she may have married the kind of one weirdo guy on the planet that kind of carried it in his mind. I didn't have other guys to talk to about it. I didn't carry the child. Is it my right to grieve, plus my own truncated skill of grief itself? So the next 6 months, I'm kind of carrying this feelings inside me without having any definition of it. Brand new into ministry. No one had really talked to about it. And I remember going on a walk with the Lord like 6 months after the loss of our child and asking, like, why? Why did this happen? Where is the child? What are you doing? And if the Lord would have said to me in 2002, Jason, I'm having you go through this so that in 2022, you can sit with an unprecedented amount of loss. Hmm. You know what I'm going to say back to him? I don't care about those people later. I want my baby right now.
Yeah.
So God is genius in usually not answering the why questions in our grief. But you know what's so amazing about him? He definitely lets us ask. And he never says, why don't you change your attitude before you talk to me? Hmm. It's going to be more like, I'm glad we're talking. What else would you like to know or tell me about me?
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of opinions when we're angry.
Yeah.
Right. And so anger asks why. So if denial and shock asks what, I would imagine anger asks why. Habakkuk starts off the same.
Yeah.
Why you make me look at violence in my streets every day?
Yeah.
God's saying, if I told you what I'm up to, you're not going to believe me. Mm-hmm. Habakkuk says, try me. God says, well, I'm doing this, this, and this. I'm having the Chaldeans judge my people, this, this, and this. Habakkuk basically says, wait, 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 never mind. I don't believe you. And God says, yeah, I get it. But he lets us let it out. Why do my enemies tremble for me? David asks. Job asks his questions. It's amazing. God is not insecure in the face of our anger. I'm glad that we're talking. Let it out.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
You got to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working through the anger stage, it's really good to get the why questions out, even though it won't be satisfactory to hear the answers or the non-answers, but it's good. It's good to get it out. But people do anger all sorts of ways. People really shut up and get quiet, withdraw. Other people get more bombastic, explosive.
Yeah.
But either way, it's anger. You ever felt that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Many, many times. Mm-hmm. Right now.
Yeah.
I mean, when we decided to do this podcast, we decided to be very honest and mm-hmm. candid about things. And I'm having a day of anger, mm-hmm. Let's be honest about that. And it's, mm-hmm. I think even in being honest about that and talking about this, it's like, I'm realizing it's amazing how I think when we view anger, we think about anger and it's always attached to blame. Like there's like a target, there's a source of something that has wounded us, and that's what our anger is directed at. But I think it's actually maturity, and also I think it takes a lot of work to realize that sometimes our anger is because of we're being affected by other things that are out of our control. And it's not us being punished. It's not us being, we're not a target. It's not some curse over our life, or, you know, it's not a plot against us. Like, life is happening. People are making choices. Painful things happen. Terrible things happen. And it's all the more reason why we have to use it, like why we have to access it. Because, like we've said in the last episode, it's like, it's us admitting that we care about all this stuff that's happening to us and around us. And I think we have to admit that we care, because if we don't, we're not alive. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. We cut out our hearts.
Yeah.
And yet the Lord has given us our hearts. And yeah. We're made in His image and with real emotions, mind, will, and emotions.
Yeah.
You know, that might be our soul there, our mind, will, and emotions.
Yeah.
So grief is a part of it. And if Christ has demonstrated grief, then shouldn't we?
Right.
Right. So here rolls that anger. And it's okay to acknowledge it and admit it. That's the part of getting through that.
Living Rooted is more than just a podcast. It's an invitation to a transformed life, rooted in the love of God. We hope you've been encouraged, challenged, and empowered to discover more about yourself and the Father's heart toward you. If you'd like to know more about Rooted to Live Ministries, visit rootedtolive.com. Follow us on Instagram for more resources, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.